and at one point had fortified them with resounding rhetoric. I think I may be allowed the privilege of at least taking into consideration the theories lately advanced by His Holiness in the Vatican, which theories establish beyond much doubt the fact that for the human female there is a period which the ecclesiastics designate as safe. And although it is naturally repugnant for me, a Congregationalist, to rely upon the word of a Catholic dignitary in discussing the secret lives of a gang of Calvinists, and although the nicety of the situation is not lost upon me, nevertheless... The phone rang, the first of many calls that were to be made that night. It was Hewlett Janders, and he was screaming, "Did you see that goddamned photograph that your goddamned son had of my daughter?" "Don't roar, Hewlett. I just got the wretched thing." "Have you finished it yet, Hawksworth?" "No, I'm only on page 5. "Then you haven't got to the part yet where he says, and listen, Hawksworth, I'm quoting your son. He adds up the total number of acts of sexual intercourse. God damn it, Hawksworth, what kind of monster have you reared?" Later, after a dozen similar interruptions, Hawksworth reached his son's first conclusion. "So if we consider all these facts, which I hold to be statistically incontrovertible, we find that the brig Thetis, for sure, and all the other missionary ships probably, were not the angelic torture barges we have been taught, but, and I use the phrase literally, floating hells of concupiscence." "No wonder they've been phoning," Hawksworth moaned. But his cup was far from running over. It had, in fact, reached not much over the sugar line in the bottom, for in succeeding pages Bromley discussed the heart of his investigations and shared his findings. What has always intrigued the scientific mind regarding the mission ships is the cramped nature of the staterooms. Again and again we have evidence that 4 men and 4 women, most of them married less than a week before entering the ship, and all of them total strangers, live together in what could best be termed a rabbit warren. We know from incontrovertible testimony that months went by without either husband or wife ever removing his long red flannel underwear, and we know that the heads of one couple had to be less than 2 feet from the heads of 3 other couples, with only a flimsy cloth barrier separating one family from another. Furthermore, as the following picture amply proves, an average-sized man could not stretch out full length. In anguish, Hawksworth Hale turned to the picture, and his suspicion was correct. The average man, whose knees were plainly doubled up, was he, caught with a silly look on his face by young Whip Janders and his Laika. Mercifully, the phone rang before he could digest the full ridiculousness of his situation. It was the headmaster at Punahou. "I suppose you've seen it, Hawksworth." "How could such a thing have happened, Larry?" Hale groaned. "We can never probe the minds of adolescents," the headmaster confessed. "Does it seem as bad to you as it does to me?" Hawksworth asked. "I haven't the time to judge degrees, Hawksworth. You realize, I'm sure, that this means..." "He's got to go, Larry. I realize that." "Thank you, Hawksworth. The important thing is he's got to get into Yale. I've taken the liberty of dispatching a cable to my old friend Callinson at The Hill. There's a chance they'll take him. I've helped Callinson in the past." "You think he can still make Yale?" "We won't condemn the boy in our report, Hawksworth. Of that you can be sure." "I appreciate this, Larry. But tell me, does this essay indicate a diseased mind?" There was a pause, and the headmaster said reflectively, "I think we'd better leave it the way I said first. About adolescence, we can never know." "Do you know where Bromley is?" "No, Hawksworth, I don't." The call ended, and Hale sat in the lowering darkness. The phone immediately resumed jangling, but Hawksworth let it ring. It would be some parent raising hell about what Bromley had said regarding their ancestors. "Damn them all," Hawksworth cried in real confusion, as he watched the lights of Honolulu come on, that nightly miracle that pleased him so much. His family had brought electricity to the city, just as they had brought so much more. But now that Ahale was in trouble, the vultures would want to rip him apart. Therefore, when the front doorbell rang insistently, Hawksworth was inclined to let it ring. He would not parade his hurt to the vultures. Let them pick the bones to their own ghoulish cackling. The door opened, and a cheery male voice cried, "Hey, anybody in?" Hawksworth could hear footsteps crossing the first big room, and he had a panicky thought. It's some cheeky reporter. And he started to run for it when the voice called, "Hey, Mr. Hale, you're the one..." "Who are you?" Hawksworth asked stiffly, turning unwillingly, to see a brash-looking young man in flannel trousers and white linen coat. He carried three books under his arm and looked disarmingly at ease. "I'm Red Kinderdine, Brahms' English teacher." He looked at a chair and, when Hale failed to respond, asked, "Mind if I sit down?" "I don't want to talk about this thing, Mr. Kinderdine." "Have you seen Brahm yet?" "No," Hale snapped. "Where is he?" "Good. I wanted very much to be the first to talk with you, Mr. Hale."
"Why?"
"I don't want you to make a serious mistake, Mr. Hale."
"What do you mean?"
"First, will you agree to honor what I'm about to say as coming from a personal friend and not from a Punahou master?"
"I don't even know you," Hale replied stuffily.
He had never liked educators. To him, they were a mealy lot. "But Bromley does." Hale looked at the young man suspiciously. "Are you in any way involved?"
"Mr. Hale, I come here as a friend, not as a conspirator."
"Excuse me, Kinderdine. Bromley has spoken well of you."
"I'm glad," the young instructor said coldly. "I'm here to speak well of him."
"You're about the only one in Honolulu."
"Exactly, Mr. Hale. Have you read Brahm's essay?"
"All I could stomach."
"Apart from the photograph of you, which is unforgivable, did you recognize your son's essay as a marvelous piece of irony?"
"Irony? It was plain, unadulterated filth, sewer stuff."
"No, Mr. Hale. It was first-rate, compassionate irony. I wish I had the talent your son has."
"You wish," Hawksworth sputtered, and stared incredulously at his visitor. "You sound like one of the elements we're trying to control in this community."
Kinderdine blew air from his lower lip into his nose and took a patient respite before daring to answer. Then he handed Mr. Hale three books. "These are for you, sir."
"What do I want with them?" Hawksworth growled.
"They will help you understand the extraordinarily gifted young man who happens to be your son," Kinderdine explained.
"Never heard of them," Hale snorted. At which the young master lost his temper slightly and said something he immediately wished he could recall.
"I suppose you haven't, sir. They happen to be three of the greatest novels of our time."
"Oh," Hale grunted, missing the sarcasm. "Well, I still never heard of them. What are they about?"
"Family histories, Mr. Hale.
A Lost Lady is a great masterpiece. I wish everyone in Hawaii could read The Grandmothers by Glenway Westcott. It would explain so much about Honolulu and Punahou. And this last one should be read by everyone who comes from a large family with many mixed-up ramifications. Kate O'Brien's Without My Cloak. It's laid in Ireland, but it's about you and Bromley, Mr. Hale."
"You know, Kinderdine, I don't like you. I don't like your manner, and I think if the truth were known, Bromley probably got off on the wrong foot, largely because of your bad influence. I don't know what Punahou's..."
"Mr. Hale, I don't like you either," the young instructor said evenly. "I don't like a man who can read one of the wittiest, most promising bits of writing I've ever known a schoolboy to write, and not even recognize what his son has accomplished.
Mr. Hale, do you know why Hawaii is so dreadfully dull? Why it's such a wasteland of the human intellect? Because nobody speculates about these islands. Nobody ever writes about them. Aren't you ever perplexed over the fact Nebraskans write fine novels about Nebraska, and people in Mississippi write wonderful things about Mississippi? Why doesn't anybody ever write about Hawaii? There was Stevenson, Hale protested, adding brightly, and Jack London. Complete junk, Kenderdine snapped disdainfully. Do you mean to sit there and tell me that you teach our children that Jack London... What he wrote about Hawaii? Complete junk. What anybody else has written about Hawaii? Complete junk, Mr. Hale. Who are you to judge your betters? I'm stating facts. And the biggest fact is that nobody writes about Hawaii because the great families, like yours, don't encourage their sons and daughters to think, to feel, and certainly not to report. You've got a good thing here, and you don't want any questions asked. Young man, I've heard enough from you, Hawksworth said stiffly. I recognize you as a type too dangerous to work with young people. So, as a member of the board at Punahou, you're going to fire me? I would be derelict to my duty if I did otherwise, Mr. Kenderdine. The young man relaxed insolently in the chair and stared at the lights of Pearl Harbor. And I would be derelict to my duty as a human being who loves these islands, Mr. Hale, if I fail to tell you that I, for one, don't give a good goddamn what you do or when you do it. I've watched you try to hold education back. I've watched you try to hold labor back. I've watched you try to hold the legislature back. There was nothing I could do about those crimes against the larger community. But when you try to hold back a proven talent, your own son, who, if he were encouraged, could write the book that would illuminate these islands, then I object. I didn't know anything about your son's rare and wonderful essay until I saw it. I got my copy late, but I will always treasure it. When he becomes a great man, I'll treasure it doubly. I detect in it certain of my phrases, and I'm glad he learned at least something from me. You're through, Kenderdine. You're out. Hale paced back and forth before the big windows, waiting for the insolent young man to leave. But the English teacher lit a cigarette, puffed twice, and slowly rose. I am through, Mr. Hale, but not because of your action. I was through when I came here. Because I won't tolerate your kind of crap a day longer. I've joined the Navy. God help America if the Navy takes men like you, Hale snorted. And when this war comes to Hawaii, Mr. Hale, as it inevitably must, not only will I be gone, but you will be too. Everything you stand for. The labor you hate is going to organize. The Japanese you despise will begin to vote. And who knows, perhaps even your cozy little deal with the military, whereby you and they run the islands, will be blasted. I'm through for the time being, Mr. Hale. You're through forever. He bowed gravely, jabbed his forefinger three times at the books, and winked. But as he left the room, he said gently, I've allowed you to fire me, Mr. Hale. Now you do one thing for me. Read the essay again and discover the love your son holds for the missionaries. Only a mind steeped in true love can write irony. The others write satire. And he was gone. Alone, Hawksworth decided to call the police to find where his son was, but he reconsidered. Then Hewlett Janders stormed over, big, robust, full of action and profanity. Hawksworth found the interview rather confusing, because Hewlett, on reconsideration, didn't want to horsewhip Bromley at all. He thought the essay a damned good bit of skylarking, and said it would probably do the mission families as much good as anything that had happened in years. Whole town's laughing their belly off, he roared. I thought that picture of you in the bunk was downright killing, Hawksworth. And what about that paragraph where he sums up? So by projection, we can assume... Where's your copy, Hawksworth? He glimpsed the mimeographed publication under a Davenport pillow, picked it up, and thumbed through it. By God, Hawksworth, that picture of you in the bunk is worth 10,000 votes if you ever decide to run for office.
Only thing you've ever done proves you're human. Here's the part I wanted. So, by projection, we can estimate that within an area less than 6 feet by 5, during a voyage of 207 days, no less than 197 separate acts of sexual intercourse must have taken place, under conditions which prevented any of the female participants from taking off their long flannel underwear, or any of the men from stretching out full length in the bunks. Now here's the part I like, Janders laughed robustly. Against its will, the mind is driven to haunting suspicions. What actually went on in those crowded staterooms? What orgies must have transpired? Out of delicate regard for the proprieties, I shall not pursue the probabilities, for they are too harrowing to discuss in public. But I recommend that each reader develop this matter logically to its inevitable conclusions. What did go on? Big Hewlett Janders slammed the essay against his leg and shouted, "You know, Hawksworth, I often used to ask myself that very question. How the hell do you think the old folks did it?" "How should I know?" Hawksworth pleaded. "Damn it all, man, it was you they photographed hunched up in one of the bunks," Janders roared. "Does anyone know where Bromley is?" Hale asked stiffly. "Sure," Janders laughed. "But don't change the subject. Don't you agree that the bit I just read is hilarious? By God, I can see prim Lucinda Whipple turning cartwheels when she reads that. One fellow at the club said your boy Brom must be a genius." "Where is he?" Hale insisted. "Whole gang of them are having chop suey at Asia Keys. Every 15 minutes somebody yells, 'Author, author,' and Brom takes a bow. Then they all sing a dirge somebody made up. Farewell, Punahou. I suppose you heard that my boy Whip also got expelled for taking the pictures. Damned glad Mandy didn't, too, posing like that with your boy. But his raucous laughter proved that he wasn't too concerned." "Did you see them at the chop suey place?" Hawksworth asked. "Yeah, I stopped by." "Well, hell, I figured, it's their big night, so I dropped off a couple bottles of scotch." "You gave those outrageous children?" "What I stopped by to see you about, Hawksworth, is that I just called that tutoring school near Lawrenceville, and they've agreed to take Whip and Brom, if you want to send him, and guarantee to get them into Yale." "That's the only problem, really, Hawksworth. Get the boys into Yale." "What school are you talking about?" "What's the name? It's right near Lawrenceville. Mark Hewlett sent his boy there when he got busted out of Punahou. They got him into Yale." Seeing the three novels on the low table, Janders picked one up in the way men do who never read books and asked, "You drowning your sorrows in a good book?" "Do you know an English master at Punahou named Kenderdine?" "Yes, crew cut job." "I had a fearful scene with him. He's at the root of this business, I'm convinced." "He's a troublemaker. Some jerkwater college like Wisconsin or Wesleyan. I keep telling Larry, get Yale men. They may not be so smart, but in the long run they give you less trouble. But Larry always drags in some genius. Yes, Kenderdine's Wisconsin." "He's no longer Punahou." "You fire him?" "I certainly did." "But you know, Hewlett, he said about the same thing you did. Said Bromley's essay would do us all a lot of good. Get people laughing. He said it was crystal clear that Brom wrote the essay with love and affection, that he wasn't lampooning the missionaries." "That's what one of the judges at the club thought," Janders recalled. "But I'll tell you what, Hawksworth. Seems it was my son who took the photo of you in the bunk, proving that sex was impossible. Well, if you can handle him, you're welcome to thrash hell out of him. I won't try because he can lick me." The door banged, and Hawksworth Hale was left alone in the big room overlooking Honolulu. For a while, he studied the never-tedious pattern of lights as they came and went along the foreshores of the bay, and the bustling activity at Pearl Harbor, and the starry sky to the south. His city, the city of his people, the fruit of his family's energy. He leafed his son's startling essay and saw again the provocative last sentence. We can therefore conclude, I think, that whereas our fathers often paced the deck of the Thetis, wrestling with their consciences, they usually wound up by hustling below to the cramped bunks where they wrestled with their wives. Idly, he picked up the three books Kenderdine had left. Hefting the Irish novel, he found it too heavy and put it aside. He looked at Willa Cather's slim book, A Lost Lady, but its title seemed much too close to his own case, and he did not want to read about lovely ladies who become lost, for it seemed to be happening throughout his group. That left The Grandmothers, which was neither too heavy in bulk nor too close to home, although had he known when he started reading, it was really the most dangerous of the three, for it was a barbed shaft directed right at the heart of Honolulu and its wonderful matriarchies. To his surprise, he was still reading the story of Wisconsin's rare old women when the lights of Honolulu sadly surrendered their battle against the rising dawn. The door creaked open gingerly, and Bromley Whipple Hale, flushed with pride of authorship and Uncle Hewlett's good whiskey, stumbled into the room. Hi, Dad.
Hello, Bromley.
The handsome young fellow with indelible Whipple charm stamped on his bright features, slumped into a chair and groaned. It's been quite a day, Dad. Grudgingly, Hawksworth observed, You seem to have cut quite a niche for yourself in the local mausoleum. Dad, I got thrown out of school. I know. Uncle Hewlett's already made plans for you and Whipple to get into one of the good cram schools. The one thing you have to safeguard is your Yale entrance. Dad, I was going to speak about this later, but I guess now's... I don't believe I want to go to Yale. Now wait a minute. I'd like to try either Alabama or Cornell. Alabama? Cornell? Hawksworth exploded. Those jerkwater... Good heavens, you might just as well go to the University of Hawaii. That's what I wanted to do, seeing as how I want to write about Hawaii. But Mr. Kenderdine says that Alabama and Cornell have fine classes in creative writing. Bromley, where did you ever get the idea that you want to be a writer? This isn't a job for a man. I've been relying on you to... You'll have to rely upon somebody else, Dad. There's lots of good, bright young men from Harvard and Penn.